You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm wearing these colors by accident. I'm from the East Coast, y'all. What's going on? Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman. I'm Molly Karam-Rose, MLB Insider. Jeff Passan, I'm going to get to you in just a moment. Your Cowboys, they're a hot mess right now. I don't know if you've heard, but the players have spoken out, and they're saying the coaching staff is totally unprepared. We will be talking about that in a moment. Yeah. But first,
I need to get to Jeff. Clark said, by the way, Dak is gone for like 5 minutes. The whole thing falls apart.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that man. All right, guys. we're focused on baseball, though, Jeff. Clayton Kershaw carved through the Tampa Bay lineup, retiring 17 of the final 18 batters he faced and leading L.A. to an 8-3 victory in the World Series Game 1. Over six innings, Kershaw allowed two hits, one walk, and struck out eight hitters. Max Kellerman, you love baseball. I know you're excited we're talking about it, and you're up first. How does Kershaw silence his critics? Talk to me.
Don't make me be this guy today. You're going to make me be this guy today. Mm-hmm. He can't do it in one World Series. I'm sorry. He can get the monkey off his back in a way, but he can't do it in just one World Series. Understand, Clayton Kershaw has the lowest ERA ever. Like, you have to go back to the dead ball era, in the modern era of all starting pitchers. He has the lowest career ERA. You know what that means? He's the best, really, at shorthand. You could look. The quality of his prime, of his very best, matches up with the elite primes, like Sandy Koufax or Pedro Martinez or anyone you want to mention. Except he had more longevity at a high level than those guys did. And he's still going. He should be going down as the greatest starting pitcher ever. He's not. Why? Look, he goes from a 2.43 all-time greatest ERA in the regular season. It balloons in the postseason, and in each successive divisional series, the deeper you go, it got higher. Finally, because he pitched six innings with a run last night, his World Series ERA, still over 4.5, is a little bit lower than his NLCS ERA, which is close to 5. Right? Let me tell you how to think about Clayton Kershaw, and I'm so glad he pitched well. I don't have to criticize him for the way he pitched yesterday. And because of this, the Dodgers have a chance to win the World Series. Koufax won 4, but really 2 is a stud ace. Valenzuela 1-1, Hershiser 1-1, because they were all big under pressure. Great World Series pitchers. The Dodgers haven't won in this era so far because their ace hasn't been that. But let me tell you how to think of Kershaw. He's Peyton Manning. Did Peyton Manning silence the critics? Well, in a way, yes, because he wound up winning 2 Super Bowls and 1 is a stud still, right? So he silenced the critics in the sense that he couldn't win it all. He couldn't win the big game. He did. But who rates Peyton Manning the greatest quarterback of all time? No one. And he was. In the regular season, Peyton Manning was probably the best player who ever lived. But in those serious football conversations about the greatest quarterbacks ever, no one ever brings up Peyton Manning anymore because the body of work, when it mattered most, didn't justify it. He got the monkey off his back with those Super Bowls, but it doesn't erase all the futility that led up to it. And I'm afraid at this moment, the same is true with Clayton Kershaw. I don't think that all gets undone with 1 or 2 great World Series games pitched. And it was an excellent game last night.
Well, the good news that I'm going to provide Jeff Passan is that I'm not going to try to be the expert here and go on that long soliloquy. I don't need to do that. I'll leave that to him. You can. You're not. But it's all right.
I am.
The bottom, you're actually not. But here's
really
the reality.
Am.
You're really
here
not.
We go.
In the end.
You
in the end.
Mess with me in
excuse
baseball?
Me. Excuse me. Yo, a lot of people know baseball. I just said you're not the expert. I didn't say you don't know baseball. Here's the deal.
I defer
the reality is, there you go. Thank you. Here's the point of the matter. Kershaw has had exceptional World Series or postseason performances. Now, his ERA is double in the postseason it was in the regular season. So you're not wrong in that regard. But it's not like what we saw last night we've never seen before. He performed against the Brewers, had a 13-strikeout performance. He performed against the Astros in the World Series, had an 11-strikeout performance. He's had games. Here's where I differ from you, Max, and it's only in this one thing. If this were a game 7, with a championship on the line, obviously, because that's what a game seven brings. And you perform like that, I think that would go a long way towards eradicating all of those demons that have haunted him. The notion that, excuse me, one postseason is not going to do it, I beg to differ. That's the only place you and I disagree. I'm saying that it's moments that count. Game one is not game seven. So you showing up in the World Series and performing in game one, even though that's a big deal, still, it ain't game seven. But if this were game seven, or if that 11 strikeout performance against the Astros or the 13 strikeout performance against Milwaukee in the postseason that I brought up, if that were a game seven, even though that's just one postseason, excuse me, think about what it did for Bumgarner and the way he performed. Now, obviously, it wasn't just one game. He did it over several games and an entire postseason. I totally get it. But what I'm saying is, when he showed up on short rest in a game seven and performed the way that he performed, that's what resonated with us. We'll hold on to that. And I think if Kershaw does something like that in a game seven, I think people will view him entirely differently. Floor is yours, Jeff.
May I just start by saying, God forbid I'm ever compared to Peyton Manning in a negative way. Like, let's be real here. If you end up being compared to Peyton Manning, Max, and you're trying to frame it like that's a bad thing, your argument's starting off in a really bad place here. Now, I'm also curious, and you can answer this after I'm done talking here. I'm also curious what the threshold is going to be for you to get off of the Clayton Kershaw can't pitch in October narrative that has pervaded the baseball world. And in some regards, fairly, in some regards, understandably. But it's almost like if he can't do it this postseason, if he can't do it next postseason, when can he do it? What's the threshold? Where's the point where you're going to start saying Clayton Kershaw is a big game pitcher? Because like Stephen A. said, there are some examples where Clayton Kershaw has pitched extraordinarily well in October. There's also an important point, though, that I think needs to be made. And it was illustrated last night, Max. Clayton Kershaw came out after only 78 pitches last night. You look at yourself and you say, 78 pitches. What kind of ace gets pulled after 78 pitches? What kind of stud goes out after 78 pitches? He should be going out there. He should be throwing a complete game. He should be, you know, all these things. That's fair. That's reasonable. But there are limitations that starting pitchers have at this point in the playoffs. You are facing lineups typically in the World Series that are so good, that grind you down so much that, you know what? A six-inning start in modern baseball is considered pretty good. Mm-hmm. And when you go look back at the foibles of Clayton Kershaw, Max, the ones that have ballooned his ERA into the fours over the course of history in the postseason, most of the damage has been done in the seventh inning because his managers had that trust in him, had that faith in him, sent him back out there maybe when he shouldn't have gone out there. So if you want to blame Clayton Kershaw for giving up those hits, those runs, those home runs, all the things that happened in those innings, I get it. He did. But in reality, I think some of what happened to him in October is due to those managers as well, not recognizing that, you know, maybe we shouldn't rely on this guy quite so much. Maybe those 18 runs he gave up in the seventh inning over seven bad games. You take those off the ERA, Max, all of a sudden it's 3.33, and that's not career good, but it's not nearly as bad.
Okay, Jeff,
as it's
let me
been.
Take your points 1, 2, 3 in a row, because I think you have one that sounds good but isn't, one that is good, and one that isn't. Okay, the first one, is it a bad thing to be compared to Peyton Manning? No, of course, but it's a given. Isn't it a given that Clayton Kershaw is one of the best pitchers who ever lived, right? That's a given. But I'll compare him to someone else. You'll be like, oh, damning him with, or not damning him with faint praise, the opposite. Like, you're trying to insult him by saying that? Wilt Chamberlain should be considered the greatest basketball player who ever lived. He isn't. Yeah. He is not, because of the lack of championships and frequently because his performance didn't give the team what they needed. Same thing with Peyton Manning. Clayton Kershaw fits into that category. It is a given. He is an all-time great. The question is where he ranks on that list, and he is knocked down by his futility in the postseason. One, two, what can he do? So that sounded good, but in fact, my point stands. What can he do to eliminate this idea that he can't pitch in October? You frame it as a narrative. And when people say narrative, what they mean is, well, this is just a story people are telling. Okay, I don't think this is a good point. Jeff, as he has to have, like, as many at least good performances as he had bad ones. How about more when they need him most? That would go a long way. Like, statistics are records of events. He did screw up a lot under pressure. Now, three, and I think this is your best point. If you pull him before, you know, seven, don't let him go out for the seventh. Some guys aren't built that way. Pedro Martinez, I mentioned him earlier. He was like a slightly built guy after 100 pitches, not the same guy. Managers got a hang of that after a while and didn't let him pitch in too deep into games. And so he was like the greatest six-inning pitcher who ever lived. Maybe the same should be true as Clayton Kershaw. In fact, you're bringing up the era in which he pitches. You're right. Six ain't bad nowadays. In fact, it's quite good. But he pitched through an era. If your point is people were adjusting to this idea during his career, he pitched through an era where plenty of other guys did that. And you were compared to your contemporaries. There are many other aces who could pitch deeper into games than he could. So, like, we're comparing him to the era in which he pitched. Before, he came up short.
Hold on, Max, are you talking about guys like Justin Verlander?
Verlander's had bad performances and good performances. No, I am talking about the
Verlander's
actual
got a higher career ERA in the World Series than Clayton Kershaw, Max. That's my point. We have this standard. No, no. We have this threshold that we believe guys should be at, that we believe Clayton Kershaw should be at.
That's a straw man argument, Jeff. I didn't bring up Verlander. You did. That's a straw man argument.
No, you brought up guys who go deep into games, and Verlander is the embodiment of that.
Well, okay, that's an example that shows maybe you don't always let him pitch deep into games, but there are other examples of guys through their primes, like Bumgarner, by the way, who was murder in the postseason. He was not Clayton Kershaw in the regular season, but they switched identities in the postseason.
But Max, you're talking about whether or not he can, because he's arguably the greatest ever when you consider his regular season performances, you're looking at him in the postseason, and essentially what you're missing is that you're really comparing him to himself in terms of what his what our expectations are of him based on what we see in the regular season. That's an entirely different argument than comparing him to other people who may or may not get it done. When you think about they say, according to the statistics, they say he's had about 11 gems in the postseason and about seven clunkers or whatever. This is what they say about him. I don't know what the hell that is. What I will tell you, however, is this. That means more times than not he produces, but the problem is our expectations are so, so great because it's Kershaw that we see in the regular season, that the fact that he has any clunkers is what disappoints us.
Steven,
and I think Jeff is pointing to the fact that, Joe, in the end, what it comes down to is that regardless of the fact that he doesn't measure up to himself, he's so elite that even when we consider it a clunker, it's only because it's him, not necessarily because he was just
Steven A. That's
awful.
A good point, but your dad was a baseball player.
Yes,
you know you some baseball.
Yes,
if
I
the
do.
Dude with the lowest career ERA in history has a 4.68 ERA after pitching, if you want to call that a gem, and I would actually,
but you know
nowadays. 4.68 in the World Series. 4.8 something in the NLCS. It's a huge sample size.
It is huge, but if I gave up 15 runs in one game, okay, and then three in the other, then I got an ERA of 6, for crying out loud. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
It can be deceptive. It can be one god-awful game, two god-awful games, a few average games, a few more exceptional games, and it averages
out.
Here's
the difference, guys, and I want to let Jeff talk.
Go ahead, Jeff.
There were guys who had overblown postseason reputations. Take Jack Morris. He had some bad postseason games, too. But in Game 7 of the World Series, he pitched when he was 100 years old, shut out baseball for 9. Like, in other words, in high-leverage moments, he got better, even though he also had clunkers. Clayton Kershaw, the deeper he's pitched into the playoffs, the worse he's pitched, Stephen A. Like, there's no way around it. I hate being the guy saying this today, but this is the question. Congratulations to Kershaw. It's not, he hasn't silenced the critics yet.
Let's get Jeff the last word. Go ahead, Jeff.
My concern is that Clayton Kershaw is not going to get a Game 7 to pitch this year because this World Series is going to be over before that. But he may get a Game 5 to pitch, and if that happens and it's a potential clincher and he goes out there, Max, and he does what he did in Game 1, it may not erase the story in your mind that Clayton Kershaw is not a big game pitcher, but I think it goes a long way to burnishing his October reputation.
By the way, exceptional story by Jeff today on ESPN.com on Mookie Betts.
Yep.
The real deal.
Just that dude. Always fun having you on the show.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, here's the deal. So following a disastrous 38-10 loss to the Arizona Cardinals on Monday night, frustration seems to be boiling over in the Dallas Cowboys locker room. This, according to NFL Network's Jane Slater. An unnamed Cowboys player said members of the coaching staff, quote, aren't good at their jobs. Another player said the coaches are totally unprepared. They don't teach.
I haven't been part of any of those type of discussions. I think like a lot of things, when you hit a part of your season or any challenge where there is negativity out there, you know, where it comes from and who it comes from. I mean, that's something that, you know, I've never chased, but I think you do have to recognize it. I think it's important to handle things as men. I mean, if you do have something to say publicly that is of most importance, I think it's important to say it to the individual, particularly in a group dynamic setting, and especially in a game of football, especially for the Dallas Cowboys.
All right, that was Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy trying to squash things there. I also want to add in that unnamed report by NFL Network, one of the players also said they don't have any sense of how to adjust on the fly. So big mess over there. We brought in Ryan Clark here. RC, always good to see you. I'll get to you in just a moment. But Stephen A., obviously, I'm starting with you. Is this a bigger problem for the players or the coaches?
Oh, it's the coaches. Just make no mistake about it. Because, see, even when you look at the players and you talk about effort, that still comes down to the coach. Because in the end, it's his job to hold you accountable. If you're not giving effort, I'll put somebody on the damn field who is going to give that effort. Mm-hmm. That's number one. When you're talking about things schematically, that is definitely an indictment, particularly against this specific coach. Because I'm here to tell you something. If you are a head coach with a Super Bowl championship on your resume, and Aaron Rodgers is still your quarterback, and you still get fired, there's something wrong with you. Because you got a Super Bowl ring, and you got Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, and they still say you ain't the man for the job. I mean, damn. I can't think of a bigger indictment against you than that. Okay, that's the only thing that would even equate to that, Max and Ryan and Molly, is if Andy Reid got fired. Because he's a Super Bowl champion with Patrick Mahomes as his coach, and he still got fired. I mean, come on now. That stuff.
He went like 10 years with Mahomes without winning again.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm saying there's something wrong with that picture. And then when you walk out the door and they're saying you're past your prime, that you're a bit archaic and stuff like that, you lose your job. You're gone for a year. You come back. Knowing you went around the league, you went to different practices, you talked about in your introductory press conference how you've learned the error of your ways, you've heard the criticism and the skepticism about you, and you think you've modified things to some degree. And what do? You go out and you hire a guy as a defensive coordinator. The last time we saw him was 6 years early in Atlanta when he had the second worst defense in the National Football League. There's a reason he couldn't get another coordinator's job for 6 years. What the hell you hired him for? So these are the kind of things that we have to look at when we talk about players. And I want to say this and then give it to Ryan and Max before I chime back in later. Here's the deal. I'm not one of those dudes that's down with, oh, you want to whisper and chirp behind somebody's back. If you can't say it to their face, then shut up. You know, because I don't give a damn what criticism I had. Ain't a damn thing I haven't said to somebody's face that I said behind their back. I'll say it to their face. The exception is football. Because the NFL and the way it's structured and the things that an organization has the power to do and the myriad of ways they can come up with justifying ostracizing you, pigeonholing you, minimizing you, etc., is so greatly against the players that the players really don't have any recourse but to speak out privately in a clandestine fashion. They don't really have a choice in the National Football League. Unlike any other sport, that sport, I mean, they could find ways to get rid of 99% of the dudes in the league and nobody would notice. So I can't blame them for so much. The issue is Mike McCarthy and his staff. And let me tell y'all something, last quote. I wouldn't be surprised if it continues to nosedive, and I'm not saying it will because they got a weak schedule. But if it continues to nosedive, I wouldn't be surprised if Mike McCarthy is fired before this season's over.
And it won't do a damn thing because it's not the coach and it's not the players. It's the owner slash GM. That's right. I'm going right back to that. Mm. Why? Because they're the ones doing the drafting. They're putting the coaching staff in place to develop. And their sense was this team is ready to win. Look at this talent we've assembled. It's the head coach failed on two levels, talking about Jason Garrett. One, the play calling, right? Like you draft Ezekiel Elliott fourth overall. He exceeds the expectations. If anything, you have a great offensive line, and you're punting from midfield instead of going for it on fourth and one. Stuff like that. Okay, that's, you know, that's not going to fly, and especially in the modern NFL. And the other thing was the CEOing of it all. Jason Garrett wasn't the right CEO for the job. But Mike McCarthy, he said he knows the analytics now. He didn't pay attention to them before, but now he understands he must pay attention to them. And that's a CEO of an organization. Look at him. He's a Super Bowl champion and the Green Bay Packers, too, the frozen tundra, right? And he was presided over this for a long time. So he's the right guy to put in place because, damn it, we have the players. No, you don't. The reason that we always overevaluate or overestimate the value of the Cowboys players is because they're the most covered team. So we're familiar with them. We can name their whole offensive line. I mean, and the offensive line deserved it. But what other team can you name so many players on that you know by name in the NFL, the average fan, as the Cowboys because they're covered constantly. And so they're a little bit overvalued as players, as talents, both sides of the ball. No, the owner who keeping himself as GM is not assembling as much talent as he thinks he is. This team was not as ready as he thought they were. And it wasn't just an issue of getting the best kind of CEO feeling kind of coach who claims he knows analytics, but really won't get the credit if they win. Jerry would get the credit if they win. But really, Jerry knows he can push around because he has very limited leverage because he was not in high demand. That's the problem. The owner slash GM, Jerry Jones.
No, listen, this is an organizational failure on all three levels, players, coaches, and ownership. Very much like this defense is a failure on all three levels, front line, linebacking core, secondary. Now, when you look at this team, of course the players are going to stick together. I mean, this is as old as varsity blues. What happened? Mox, Tweeter, Billy Bob, Lance, they all stuck together. It was Coach Kilmer that was outside pulling his pants up, standing next to a statue of himself outside the high school. So you know that those guys are going to stick together. But even if the players stick together, yeah, Stephen A., you can coach effort, but you know what? You got to give effort. And you can coach it up and tell me where the X's and O's are supposed to fit, but I have to be there. And then who would have ever thought that having a sleepover wasn't the way to pick a coach? Yes, Jerry Jones and Mike McCarthy had a sleepover. Two very grown adult men decided to do their business deal, to do their interview at a sleepover. What were they in, onesies with the little buttons on the butt that you put up together? I don't know what that is. That's not the way business is supposed to be done. And so now you want to talk about analytics? You know what he said? This was a person, a people problem he had today. And during that interview, when he was talking about the players and what was going on, the next question was, do you think you guys have gotten better? You know what he said? Well, the analytics say, this ain't an analytic issue right now. They ask you a simple question from the point of leadership. As a team, since you've gotten here, have you gotten better? It's an easy yes or no answer. If you do have a Super Bowl winning coach, if you do have a coach that has coached one of the greatest players of all time in Aaron Rodgers, I'm not hiring you to tell me what the analytics say. I'm not going to come on this show and have Max, who loves analytics, have Stephen A., who's been in journalism his whole life. I'm not going to talk to y'all two people about analytics and journalism. I'm going to talk to y'all about football, because football is what I live and what I do. Mike McCarthy has lost himself. He ain't had himself in a long time. It was the wrong hire, which starts with the owner. He's the wrong coach, which is on him. And the players better play for themselves, because when this whole thing blow up, Jerry Jones still going to be a millionaire and they ain't going to have no jobs.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Oh, I can't wait for this one. UFC 254, it's Saturday, an early start, 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Khabib Nurmagomedov is undefeated, the lightweight champ, putting his belt on the line against our guest right here, Justin Gaethje. Justin, thank you so much for being with us this morning. So much we want to talk to you about, sir, but I want to play sound from you yesterday. Nurmagomedov was on the show. Take a listen to this, please.
Justin is very interesting fighter. He's very exciting. About his last fight, I was very impressed. It was great performance. He know how to wrestle, how to kick, how to punch. He have good experience. But same time, I feel I'm going to make him tired and I'm going to finish this guy. This is my opinion, you know. But I'm ready for all rounds, you know, all 5-round war. But my goal on this fight, make him tired and choke him out.
Justin, what's your reaction right there to Khabib saying that he's going to choke you out?
Yeah, there's no pain in that. I'm not scared of that. All that is a nice little dream. So there's nothing there. I'm going in there to create damage. As soon as I chop his legs up a few times, he's not going to be able to, you know, explode like he wants to get to my legs, get to my hips. We're not going to be on the fence. He's going to be in a world of hurt once I touch a couple of nerves in his legs.
Justin, appreciate you being on the show. I'm a huge fan of yours. Talk to me about this. Khabib Nurmagomedov is 28-0. What is it about him, in your estimation, that's left him undefeated? And what is it specifically that you think you can do that nobody else has been able to do when it comes to him?
I mean, shoot. You know, time will tell. This guy, 28-0, he beats everybody the same exact way. He is very dominant, very superior in his ability to put you against the fence and use the fence to get you to the ground. Unfortunately for him, I've been training the same thing as he has for as long as he has. Nobody is a wrestler. Nobody is a grappler. Nobody's been wrestling as long as he has. He has outworked everybody he's fought except for me, and that's what I bring.
Justin, ever since early UFC, what we saw was that the BJJ and wrestling was necessary. That background was necessary. And when American wrestlers figured that out and they could add striking and, you know, ground and pound and stuff, they started being very successful. You have a wrestling background, but really you're known as a striker. How did that happen? How did you go from a wrestling background to being so effective as a striker?
You know, I would say it's my athletic ability. You know, I played every sport. Football was my favorite sport. I was a quarterback in high school. I was a pitcher in high school. Throwing a ball is the same mechanics as throwing a punch. You know, I hit so hard, and that's because, you know, I've been working on the mechanics of throwing a punch without knowing it since I was a child. You know, throwing a ball. Me and my dad played catch, you know, almost every week, every day. This dude was, you know, my twin brother didn't have the same energy as me, so he had to get out there and be my play buddy.
I think anybody going up against you knows better than standing in front of you and trying to just swing blows and go blow for blow. Nurmagomedov used the word choke for a reason because he plans on wrestling you. I know you talk about that being your background, but you've got 19 knockouts in your career, if I remember correctly. Talk to me about how you're going to go about the business of taking him out as opposed to just getting in a wrestling match with him. That's not what you want to do, is it?
No, I've used my wrestling my entire career to keep this standing. The quickest way off a mat was to pin somebody. The quickest way out of a fight is to knock somebody out. I don't get paid by the minute. I get paid by the match. So I'm in there to finish it as quick as possible.
How do you use your wrestling to stay standing up? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so, you know, taking somebody down is just as important as not getting taken down in wrestling. You know, using your hips to sprawl, to scramble. Those are just as important as being able to shoot a good double leg or throw a good lat drop. And in American wrestling, you are rewarded for getting out, for escaping. So, again, I've been working on that for a very long time.
So it's like wax on, wax off. You were working on things you didn't even realize that you were working on, and now it's coming in handy. I want to ask you about Khabib's kind of aura of invincibility. 28 now, you know, 18 inside the distance, best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. How do you overcome that psychologically, going in there? You said you're not scared of a little dream if you get choked out. But how do you overcome that kind of aura he has in your own mind as you prepare for the fight?
No, nobody is unbeatable. Nobody is infallible. I was 18-0, and I was you know, undefeated at one time as well. I had 18 fights. That's not a small amount of fights to go undefeated in this sport. I had 7 amateur fights. I was 25-0 my first 25 fights. So, you know, he would be a fool to think he's infallible. He knows he's not. He knows he can be beaten. That's why, you know, everybody's so nervous. This sport is unique. This sport is not like football, not like basketball, not like golf. There's so much on the line. You know, you represent your family, and when someone loses, you know, your family feels it. It's there's repercussions to losing, you know, not only financially, but as far as your health. You know, yeah. Football is so dangerous, but there is a team out there to support you. Once you step in the octagon, it's you and you alone. And he will understand that I know he's human, and he will understand that he's human as soon as that fight starts.
Yeah, I mean, you were fearless against Ferguson. You took that on short notice, TKO'd him, and a lot of people thought Ferguson had the best shot at handing him his first loss, so now you're up for the challenge here. But I want to ask you about a quote I saw that you said to Mike Tyson that I find really interesting. You said that you would rather lose by knockout in a crazy fight than win by decision. How does that mentality prepare you when you head into the octagon?
You know, I do not worry or think about things that are out of my control. You know, preparation, nutrition, sleep, and work, and you know, how hard I work when I step in that gym every single day are the only things that are going to play a factor when I step into the octagon. So when I step in there, I do not worry about anything other than those very, very few things. And it makes me, you know, comfortable. It allows me to be okay with whatever the outcome is. As long as I do my best, then, and I do not, you know, and I represent myself and my family to the fullest, then I have nothing to lose in there.
All right, I know you're focused on Nurmagomedov, and we have to let you go, so I need a yes-no answer here, but I got to ask you, Conor McGregor said he would butcher you. Could we potentially see Gaethje McGregor in the future?
He's fighting at 170 now, so he's irrelevant.
Okay, we'll leave it there. We'll be watching Saturday. Best of luck to you, Justin. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy the show. Enjoy the carnage.
Oh, we will. We'll enjoy. We're here for all of it.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.